Chapter 11, about the Inn of the Two Little Silver Dishes and the innkeeper who was a redbeard. The main street of Khalgan was wide and full of shops, with big gilded inscriptions over them. Lots of people were about, and if half of them had not been soldiers, no one could have dreamed that machine guns had been firing in that same street only a week ago. Now children were playing in the street. The knife sharpener was blowing his long trumpet. The barber was beating his tuning fork. A draper was calling out, 10 cents a foot, only 10 cents. And through all this medley of sound, the bells of a homing caravan could be heard. Good Fortune had to drive quite slowly. Once he had actually to stop, because a restive ass wanted to throw its rider. "Look out, you!" shouted Good Fortune, leaning out of the truck window. "Don't you know what an automobile is?" "I do," said the man, "but my ass doesn't. Be good enough to tell him." "I'll teach the rascal something," shouted Good Fortune, and he honked so loudly that the ass galloped off, terrified. Good Fortune laughed. But when the town gate came in sight, the customs barrier was already down, and he had to stop again. He started scolding, and the customs man scolded back. "How dare you hold up a military car?" shouted Good Fortune. "You should be trembling in your shoes." The customs man grinned. "I do dare, and I'm not trembling," he shouted back. "I'll break your bones!" "Don't shout so loud. Have you anything to declare? A man on an ass just told me you have." "He's a liar," shouted Good Fortune, "and his father and mother are liars, and his grandmother, too. I'll put a bullet through your belly for believing him instead of me." Saying this, Good Fortune drew out his pistol. A brass ring adorned the handle, and a silk tassel dangled from it. It looked magnificent. At sight of the red-tasseled pistol, the customs man hurriedly opened the barrier. "You scoundrel!" he shouted after Good Fortune as he passed through. "May the spokes fall from your wheels, you wicked fellow of evil ways!" Outside the city gate, there were only a few wretched mud huts. A broad riverbed strewn with stones, with only a thin trickle of water, came out of the side valley into which Good Fortune turned the truck. Christian took out the map and tried to figure out the route. "Now we're here," he said to Big Tiger with his finger on the Khalgan region. And a while later, "Now we're here." But he was not too sure. "What's the name of the next place?" Big Tiger wanted to know. The question took Christian by surprise. "I shall have to look with the magnifying glass," he said. For Christian, it was a question of not losing face, as they say in China. For even little boys have to take care they do not get their faces darkened or even lost altogether by bragging and bluffing. In his embarrassment, he looked up from the map and noticed a lot of thick-trunked trees with spreading crowns. "Black poplars," Big Tiger declared. Scarcely had Big Tiger said, "Black poplars," than Christian got a bright idea. It occurred to him that there is very little woodland in China, in fact, hardly any in the northern provinces. Therefore, this lot of poplars, which might almost be called a wood, should certainly be marked on the map. Sure enough, there they were, right to the north of Khalgan. He found the road, too, and behind the circles, a little settlement of 4 or 5 houses was shown, with a name beside it. "The next place is called Home in the Rocks," reported Christian. "As soon as the trees end, we'll see the houses." "That's a fine map," said Big Tiger. "It's useful to be able to look up beforehand the places we reach later." And he was even more impressed when the trees ceased and the houses of Home in the Rocks came into sight. They stood on a mountainside to the right of the highway, and each was surrounded by a wall. The big doors of rough-hewn planks were shut. "That's on account of bandits," Big Tiger explained. "Are there really bandits about here?" asked Christian. "Perhaps it's written on the map," Big Tiger ventured. "Look and see." "There's nothing here about robbers, but the road keeps going this way and that way, and then there's a village called Lake Town, and on the way there, there's an inn called the Two Little Silver Dishes, where the road begins to wind like a snake." "Your map is wonderful," Big Tiger acknowledged once more. "In the end, the inn will turn out to be a robber's house, only we won't know it." The truck now jolted over big stones and boulders, the drums banged together, and Christian and Big Tiger were lifted up and flung heavily down. They were crossing the riverbed. The valley became narrower, little islands overgrown with brushwood lay in the riverbed, and the mountains all around were now higher. White clouds drifted over their rocky crests, and in the clouds an eagle hovered. And then the end of the valley came in sight. Not far off was a steep wall of rock towards which the road ran in a straight line. The distant roar of a waterfall could be heard. The mountain walls grew ever closer together. This made the roar of the torrent louder, and the truck traveled along a stone dam high above the riverbed in the direction of the dark, rocky wall. "The two little silver dishes," said Christian, pointing to a wayside inn. At that moment, Good Fortune stopped the truck and began honking furiously, and the din of the horn, mingling with the roar of the waterfall, echoed down the mountains. The host of the two little silver dishes appeared at his door, and Good Fortune shouted up to him, "Quick, quick, get us tea!" "As your excellency commands," the host called back, bowing low at the sight of the military uniform, and then disappearing quickly into the inn. They all got out. Greencoat, looking very surly, sat by the roadside. "I thought you were in a hurry," he said to Good Fortune. "Why, then, are you stopping here?" "It's plain you're no motorist," replied Good Fortune, opening the steaming radiator. "The steepest stretch of our journey begins here, and I've got to prepare for it. The motor has to be cooled. While I'm cooling it, you must walk on ahead." "We'll go on ahead, too," said Christian. "We shall observe the confusing variations of the road," said Big Tiger. "No," said Good Fortune, "you must walk behind." Along came the innkeeper, carrying a steaming tea kettle, and bowing and scraping to left and right, and, "Oh, Mr. Good Fortune," he cried, "oh, your excellency, please forgive my old eyes, and good day to you also, young gentlemen. Do please look at the magnificent landscape. Great poets who have come here have written immortal words on the walls of my dining room. The waterfall roars like thunder over the mountains, and it veils the valley in mist. Beautiful poetical words, sir. Drink your tea, sir. That's the stuff to keep you sound and well." "Oh, shut up," growled Greencoat, raising his head. "Oh, what a joy," cried the innkeeper. "So Mr. Greencoat is here, too. Welcome, sir, at your service, sir. The tea is excellent and piping hot. A very special tea, sir, a lucky tea, so to speak, with acacia blossoms in it." "Be off with you," said Greencoat. The innkeeper poured out the tea. "I shall be off directly, sir. Indeed, I'm gone already. But what joy, what a pleasant surprise, what a happy reunion." "Old Hung-Hoot, sir," growled Greencoat. And again Christian wondered what the word meant. After the second cup of tea, Greencoat disappeared into the inn. "There go two old Hung-Hoot-Sirs together now," said Good Fortune with a grin. Christian picked up courage. "Please forgive my ignorance, honored sir," he said. "I know that Hung-Hoot-Sir means red beard, but neither of the gentlemen has got a red beard." "Good heavens!" exclaimed Good Fortune. "I didn't think you were so innocent. You seem pretty well up in most things." "Well, that's one thing I don't know," said Christian. "I'll explain it to you," said Good Fortune. "Those two worthy gentlemen haven't always been gentlemen. People say they were formerly redbeards, but nobody knows for certain, as that's a thing nobody speaks about, for a redbeard is a man who goes into the mountains." "Aha!" said Christian. "So a redbeard is a bandit." "Hush!" said Good Fortune. "I didn't say that." "Why, then, does Mr. Greencoat call other people redbeards when he himself was once—" "Hush!" said Good Fortune. "It's not known for certain." "But it's impolite to call other people Hung-Hoot-Sir." "He does that," said Good Fortune, "to keep people from thinking he may have been one himself." "Let's see what they're up to," whispered Big Tiger to Christian. They then asked Good Fortune if they might fetch him a pail of water. Taking the pail, they climbed the steps, passed through the garden, and entered the half-open door of the inn, the dining room in which, so the innkeeper asserted, great poets were inspired with high thoughts, was a soot-blackened room with a pot hanging over the fireplace. From the next room, Greencoat could be heard speaking in a low voice. "What possessed you to let out that we're old acquaintances, you idiot?" "But we are," the innkeeper countered, "and old friendships should not be broken." "I'll break your neck," muttered Greencoat. "You reckless idiot, you're treading on the tiger's tail."
"Beg pardon, Mr. Greencoat. I only meant, sir, I only thought, sir, of old times."
"There you're at it again. It's safer not to think, I tell you. Is the road in order?"
"In first-class order."
"Take care you don't flood it."
"Oh, how could I dream of doing such a thing? Shh! Excuse me, sir. I think I hear someone in the dining room. Excuse me, sir. I must go and see."
Big Tiger had thoughtlessly put down the pail. Christian had tipped it with his foot, and now they were both scared. They stepped back quickly 2 paces and stood in the doorway as if they had just come in.
"Oh, so the 2 princes have come to imbibe the wisdom of the poets in my poor dwelling," exclaimed the innkeeper with a smile.
"We came to fill our pail," said Big Tiger. "Is there a well here?"
"There's a splendid well just behind the house. May I show the young gentleman round to it?"
"No, not that way. Around the house, please." The innkeeper went on ahead. Behind the house there were stables full of horses and a bamboo hedge, behind which a dog began barking fiercely.
"Here's the well," remarked the innkeeper. "Now I'll let down the basket."
"But we've got a pail," said Big Tiger.
"Heaven preserve us from folly," cried the innkeeper. "How could I trust a valuable pail to this old rope?"
"No, no, it's best to draw up 2 basketfuls of water, and then the pail won't get scratched. Now, please, there, there, the 1st basket is down already." They could hear the willow baskets splashing in the well shaft. "Up, quick," cried the innkeeper, "that the good may become visible, as the poets say." Chattering away, he pulled vigorously at the rope, which ran over a wooden pulley, and the basket reappeared. Big Tiger lifted it down and emptied it into the pail. "Half a blessing is not the whole," said the innkeeper, starting the rope running again. "Completion follows upon increase."
"We thank you," said Big Tiger and Christian, when the pail was full.
"Why such hurry?" asked the innkeeper. "Where are my younger brothers traveling to?"
"We are on our way to Sinkyang."
"Not for a carload of devils, I beg pardon. I only mean this is a bad day for traveling. I didn't expect any guests today. But times are changing. No one heeds the calendar anymore."
"Oh, yes, they do," said Big Tiger. "We've read that the spokes fall out of wheels today."
"Didn't I know it?" cried the innkeeper, delighted. "Didn't I know the young gentlemen were men of learning? Most certainly the spokes will fall out of the wheels. It may not happen right away, and it may not be exactly the spokes. You can't take the calendar by the letter. But all sorts of misfortunes can befall travelers. Snowstorms, heat waves, sandstorms, floods, thunder, lightning. Yes, indeed, and bandits, too."
"We haven't seen any yet," said Christian.
"That's a thing you can never know," said the innkeeper, looking serious. "You can't read off a man's face whether he's a bandit or not. The noble bandit fraternity go home to till their fields this time of year, but the really tough guys, the deserted soldiers, they don't go home, and they're up to every kind of devilment on all the roads. As I say, it may not happen today. It may be tomorrow or after. At any rate, I wish you young gentlemen a safe journey and prosperous business."
"We haven't any business," said Christian. The innkeeper laughed as if to say, "Tell that to the Marines."
"Please excuse us," said Big Tiger. "We have to go. Good fortune is waiting." As he walked on ahead, the innkeeper tried once more to turn the conversation on to business, but Big Tiger said, "We have no experience of any sort of business."
"We are young and ignorant," Christian seconded him.
It was plain the innkeeper was irritated, though blessings continued to flow from his lips. At last he turned back to his inn.
"He's an old gossip," said Good Fortune. "What's he been saying to you?"
"He thinks it's not lucky to travel today," said Big Tiger. "I know that, too. Haven't you read the calendar?"
"Yes, I've read the calendar, honored sir."
"And what do you think of it?"
"I think it's nearly evening already, and nothing has happened to us yet."
"That's true, and nothing is going to happen. But if something does happen, I'll shoot a hole through that talkative fellow's body."
"Oh, please don't do that," said Christian. "He can't help it if we meet with misfortune."
"That's all you know," replied Good Fortune, closing down the radiator and wiping his hands. "But I know these scoundrels as well as I know this region. He hasn't only got an inn, he's got a stable full of horses, too."
"And he's also got a dog," said Christian.
"He hires out the horses to travelers who need fresh horses to reach the pass," continued Good Fortune. "If a traveler doesn't hire his horses, something happens. Do you see that little temple up there? Well, there's a young shepherd there, minding the innkeeper's sheep. As soon as the innkeeper gives a sign, the boy turns a lever, which diverts the stream from the waterfall, and it runs over the road instead. The traveler's car gets stuck, and then he has to take a yoke of horses at double price. If he's late, he has to stop the night, and that costs a lot of money, too. Moreover, his goods are stolen, and nobody can find them again, because they're hidden in the kennels, where no living mortal would venture. I can tell you, that chattering fellow has cunning enough in him for 10 scoundrels." Saying this, Good Fortune got into the driver's cab, and though he saw Greencoat coming, he began to honk. And Greencoat, though he heard the honking, did not hurry. He walked solemnly past the truck, which was already slowly moving off.